This is the March 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Naomi Bloom. She's with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Indiana. Greg Johnson joins us from TGM in Champaign, Illinois. And Rich Nelson of Allendale is here from McHenry, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org, or look us up in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple and Spotify. You can use us in Amazon Music or in Audible, the NPR One app, and all of the rest of your favorite podcast apps. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Let's begin our conversation today by turning to Rich Nelson from Allendale out of McHenry, Illinois, where this week the company released updated sets of numbers for the upcoming marketing year related to acreage, a survey of farmers. Thank you, Rich, for being with us. Can you give me the basics about the survey, not the numbers just yet, but how many people are surveyed, what the response rate is like, and how accurate it has tended to be historically?
Sure. So, Todd, as far as the survey, we've been conducting this one for over 25 years. In terms of numbers, we don't release those publicly, but I will say very clearly we've got surveys from over 28 different states, and we had enough composite surveys to look up or to what we suggest is accurately estimate up to 9 states in the Midwest and certainly the Plains as well. So this does give us coverage for about 77-78% of corn and soybean ground. And as far as accuracy in the past 10 years, we've in each of the past 10 years, we've gotten the direction of the change in acres right on corn 10 out of 10 times. Soybeans 9 of the past 10 times, and typically our surveys within about a million and a half of USDA's March estimate for corn, about 2 million for soybeans. So we do suggest it is a good precursor to what could be seen at the end of this month here.
By change, you mean year over year change, and I assume. And then what were the numbers this year?
And, you know, and that is right. This is a year over year change, whether producers will be increasing or decreasing in terms of acreage versus the prior year. Now, of course, for the big question for this year, it would be really, are we going to have the change that USDA suggested back on their February conference? For corn, that was a decrease of 3.6 million acres. And for soybeans, that was an increase of 3.9. Our survey, actually, whether it's at the Commodity Classic, by phone afterwards, or internet afterwards, it was relatively consistent. And these numbers from producers suggest that they will do a change, but not much. Corn down only 1.2 million from last year. Soybeans only up 2.2. So certainly for corn, this does suggest perhaps a challenging environment regarding supply in these next few months here.
By your survey in the history, then, you would have the change direction correct. It is lower, but this still remains a very large number. When you put it into the supply and demand tables that you're developing, what other kinds of things do you see? For instance, what's the harvested acre, the trend yield you're using, implied production, those kinds of things?
Certainly right here. Now, as far as the discussion on what this means for actual numbers, using our numbers as far as a 91% harvested, 91 and change, and a trend yield, we're just a little higher than USDA on trend yield, 181.9. We're suggesting a corn crop size, assuming trend yields, of 15.5 billion bushels. Now, that by itself is a new record, but maybe by just under 200 million bushels. The issue with corn is this beginning stocks, the large increase of what's left over from this current old crop. That's where we have this large total supply problem, which is almost 1 million or 1 billion bushels over last year. So this pretty much puts an ending stock on the very positive side, perhaps 2.5 billion bushels. Realistically, though, it could be about 2.7, maybe even 2.8. So this would suggest a problem for corn. Soybean numbers, though, this would suggest still a production higher than last year, but not a new record. And certainly for total supply, same type of story. Total supply up about 250 million bushels, and stocks, in this case, though, just under 400, so not as bad as USDA suggested last month here.
Now let's turn our attention to Commodity Week at hand in the usual way, which is to get the list of items that we should discuss. Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Indiana. What's on your list this week?
Well, just keeping an eye on, I think, the reality right now in the grain markets that, you know, we had this nice rally recently. Prices getting up to the 50-day moving average area, slightly above them for beans, but then not enough immediate friendly news to get prices to go higher. So looking at cash sale opportunities for producers in the short term. Do want to touch on the cattle market with that bearish reversal today after the April cattle filled the gap on charts. So lots to talk about with cattle also, and the cattle on feed report next week. So we might see some market movement there.
And Greg Johnson from TGM here in Champaign.
Well, I think I'd like to discuss the discrepancy between CONAB's soybean estimate for Brazil and the USDA. CONAB continues to lower, as do most of the private analysts down there, but yet USDA seems to be a little bit hesitant to lower the crop too much, and the discrepancy is pretty wide right now, as it was last year, and so I think that discrepancy bears talking about.
And finally, Rich Nelson, we've already gone through the numbers that Allendale has released. Anything else on your list?
One thing I'm kind of watching here, which hasn't been discussed yet, is this coming pollination issue for the second crop of corn out of Brazil. Keep in mind, at the end of this month through April, we have all the fireworks with weather-related issues, and certainly we have questions about this current forecast, which has changed moderately, but still gives us some clear questions about the size of this coming corn crop as we go through this very key time frame.
Let's deal with old crop corn at the moment. Rich, I'll come back to you in just a bit because I know in the numbers you released earlier in the week, you also surveyed producers about what they still had on hand for corn. However, I'm wondering, Greg, how much that changed in your opinion pre and post March 1st, and what you think is still in the bin nationwide and locally?
I would think farmers are probably approaching 60% sold. It was under 50% as we entered into the month of February, but as we got closer to the 1st of March, I think the bills came due, and some farmers just got tired of watching this market go lower. We basically had gone lower 17 weeks in a row. There was a couple weeks in there where we were up a couple cents, but by and large, the trend was down for those 17 weeks. And it just, I think, wore away at the farmers' resolve to hold on. And so we saw farmers selling of corn pick up from probably 45%. Now they're probably 60% sold. Soybeans, I think they were 60% sold already. And with the rally here in the last couple of weeks, we've probably gotten that up to 70% sold for soybeans old crop.
And Rich, taking a look at the numbers from your survey, that appears to be in line with what the farmers are telling you. How do those numbers compare to previous years?
You know, we do have to admit that this lower price environment has been a little challenging, and producers have been a little more resistant to make some sales. Our survey in this year suggested 63% sold on old crop corn, 70% on soybeans. And now keep in mind, these numbers are lower than the prior 3 years of higher prices. During those survey time periods, corn sales at this time were 75 to 79% sold, and soybeans 85 to 88% sold. So we have seen producers certainly reacting, perhaps a little lagging right now on overall sales.
And Naomi, if you have anything to add about where farmers are at in their sales, that's fine. Otherwise, I do want to talk to you a little bit about the cash sale opportunities, the rally we've had, the 50-day moving average that you mentioned earlier.
Right. So markets earlier this week for corn crept higher. You know, we had that nice bullish reversal at the end of February, right into that price or roll as the March contract was going into first notice day and maybe coming front month. So producers at that time had to make cash sales. A lot of them re-owned if they made those cash sales and re-owned with call options. With the market earlier this week getting up near that 50-day moving average, that was kind of a big hurdle to have to get through. So producers were able to make more cash sales. Some took profits on calls that were purchased just because we had a 40-cent rally. Now going forward, I think producers need to be aware of, I look back at what the past 10 years July corn futures did during the month of March until late April. And if the perception was that ending stocks were getting smaller and we were in that bull market like we had been the past 3 years, then we saw the prices work higher during March and April. But the reality is that if the perception is that ending stocks are building, getting larger, then usually we see kind of some sideways trade action for July corn futures during the rest of March and into April. So with the recent rally that we've had, I think a lot of producers made those cash sales. I agree with the other gentleman as far as where folks are for cash sales right now. And those who needed to sell to earn revenue, they did it. And then those who are going to hunker down and hold out, they're going to hunker down until probably that late May, early June timeframe when we get our potential summer rally. So I guess my thought would be, if you still have some cash in the bin and if you're needing to generate some cash right now for corn in the bin, I would take a look at the opportunities in front of you, because if we can't get any immediate bullish news in the coming weeks, we're going to see prices potentially trade sideways to a little bit lower until we get some fresh fundamental news down the road.
Are you putting a time frame on that through the end of the month, or in this case, the 28th for the grain stocks and the prospective plantings report, and saying if you're going to need cash flow, that you probably ought to make a sale between then and now on the current rally?
I would get it done, very, very soon, as in tomorrow morning, potentially, just because, again, without any fresh news, the market's going to struggle to rally, especially, we had the chance the last 3 days to get through that 50-day moving average. Corn futures couldn't do it. And the fact that beans did it this morning but then closed back below it is a little bit of a negative signal. So between now and the quarterly stocks report, planted acres report, the news might be a little bit on the quiet side. So I'm thinking that sideways trade is sideways to lower trade is probably what we're going to see.
Greg Johnson, do you think farmers will be willing, if they need the cash flow, to pull the trigger so quickly? And I mean before tomorrow morning's fine, but before the time that we get to that March 28th set of reports.
Well, I certainly hope so. I think we were feeling a little relieved, like we had dodged a bullet with the corn market up 2 weeks in a row and off to a third consecutive week higher until the setback later in this week. But I think the numbers from Allendale, for example, are a stark reminder, a good reminder, that we still have a 2.1 billion bushel carryout. If we really do grow 93.5 million acres and have anything close to a trend line yield, you're talking 15.5 billion bushels on top of that. That's a lot of corn. The demand very rarely gets over 15 billion. So we could be adding to the carryout again if everything goes right. And we've got a long ways to go. We don't know the acres yet. We don't know the weather. But I think it is a good reminder for farmers that we have to assume normal. And if we assume normal, we want to definitely take advantage of any rally that we get between now and the March 28th reports.
And Rich, your thoughts on the immediate needs farmers might have?
I would suggest that this discussion about old crop marketing is actually quite important, especially when you look at basis in tight supply years versus heavy supply years. Now, we have about a 20% appreciation on corn from harvest lows to current basis for central Illinois. We've got about a 23-cent improvement for soybean basis up until this point as well. The question, though, is in heavy supply years, which we are now in this grouping, we often do not see any further basis appreciation past this point. So I have no problem at all making cash sales at this point for corn and soybeans at this obviously quite low price, and certainly re-ownership would be just fine. Now, even in heavy supply years, we often do make a two-step down, one-step up type movement throughout this year. And you can argue for some type of moderate spring rebound of some sort. But at this point in time, this basis issue is quite relevant, especially given the interest rate concerns that many producers do have right now.
Farmers will be reluctant to sell old crop and new crop at the same time. Should they be? And does that mean they look forward to the May June time frame, or do you have other advice for them, Naomi?
I would be willing to make some sales, old crop and new crop, and then I would put an emphasis on remembering that the summer high, except for 2012, comes between Mother's Day and Father's Day most of the time. So just when you're busiest in the field, just when you're looking at your crop growing out of the field and you're nervous it's going to grow, that's the best time to be forward contracting. So just make sure that if you're not doing anything now and you're waiting for some kind of a summer rally, that you're going to be aware of that time window. Again, Mother's Day to Father's Day. And that you're going to be able to pull the trigger, and it's going to be the hardest time to do it emotionally. But from a technical standpoint, from a strategic standpoint, get the orders in with your elevator for Dease corn near the 495 level, because again, as these gentlemen pointed out, we are dealing with 2 billion bushel carryout. Even if we have less corn acres next year, we're still going to be dealing with 2 billion bushel carryout, if not more. So whatever kind of a summer weather pop we get out of this market, you've got to be disciplined and pull the trigger and make the sales.
Turn your attention, Rich Nelson, to South America. You mentioned you wanted to talk about issues related to weather, second crop corn. It's in the ground. It's growing. Still, there could be pollination issues depending on when the dry season comes. How closely do we need to watch it? What difference does it make?
I certainly think it is quite relevant here for us. And it's not going to change the U.S. supply story at all. And certainly we can argue it's going to take an extreme yield hit this year to change that story as well from the U.S. side. But for Brazil specifically, you know, the past 2 months of rainfall have been about 35% below the long-term average. Now, officially, this is just like the setup that U.S. producers saw this summer. And as a reminder, it's rainfall at pollination, not before, which determines the extreme bulk of yields. So we can suggest some yield damage at some point, whether it's enough to really get us a change in the general U.S. supply narrative. I'm not quite sure about that point, but can we have some type of psychological-based risk being added on there? I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that as we go into spring here.
Do you agree, Greg, with that part? And I want to put it in some context related to the export market, which is where the competition would be, far and away the Brazilian export market by percentage of the size of their crop is what, 60%, I think, of what they produce, or thereabouts. 40% of what they produce. My apologies. And the United States, it is the marginal side. Both are trying to get to China, although it appears clearly that the Brazilians have done a better job of making that happen as of recent. And the Chinese would be moving corn at this time of year from South America, or the coming months from South America, rather than out of the United States. How does this all play together?
Yeah, I think that the export number is kind of the third leg of the stool. The biggest use for corn, obviously, is feed. That's 5.7 billion bushels here in the U.S. Ethanol usage and other domestic usage, 5.6, 5.7 billion. Exports are only 2.1. So even if we bump up exports to 2.2, 2.3 as a result of a shorter Brazilian crop, you know, we might cut the carryout by a couple hundred million. But then again, if we grow the kind of acres that we were talking about earlier and have a normal crop, that's still way too much corn. So I guess my bottom line is, they could have a problem. They're not off to a very good start in Brazil, but we need to take advantage of any of those problems because we've still got a ton of old crop corn left to sell, and we need to start selling new crop corn at the same time that we sell the old crop corn.
Naomi, that brings me to domestic usage. Feed usage is important. The cattle and feed numbers are due out. You wanted to talk about the charts. Once you've done that, can you put it in context of what that might mean related to the grain stocks report and how we're you might be or not about total consumption in the United States?
So feed usage in the United States has, in my opinion, been a little bit more constant over the past bit. So we know that the cattle herd is smaller. That's a known thing. We know that our hog herd is about the same size, and same with our poultry. So I don't really expect too many fluctuations on the feed usage side one way or the other. So going into that quarterly stocks report at the end of the month, I'm actually not looking for too many surprises. And in reality, when you go back and you look at charts over the past decade of how does the market respond after the planted acreage report and the quarterly stocks, you get kind of a one-day, one-hit wonder out of it. Not a lot of times is it a major direction changer. It's more just fodder to talk about. So I'm not putting too much thought into there's going to be many surprises on it. And then as far as cattle go, you know, we know that the herd is smaller. And that's why prices have had a nice recovery rally here recently. April live cattle futures today finally filled a gap to the upside that was left behind from October. And then all cattle prices and the feeder cattle prices had been trading near technical overhead resistance levels. You know, we know that the story is friendly. We know this. But the point, though, is that we don't have any immediate over-the-top bullish news to take us propelling higher. And today we had not great export news on the cattle side of things. 11,200 metric tons, that was down 20% from the previous week, and it's a marketing year low. So we're not exporting a huge amount of cattle. Domestic demand, I think, has been pretty constant. But now that we're heading into grilling season, what I'm curious about, is it just going to be brats and burgers on the grill this spring, or are people actually going to spend the money on steaks? And I'm thinking that they're not. So I think that you're going to see lower cuts of beef still in demand, but not any surplus of new demand. So I'm a little bit cautious on the cattle market. I know that the underlying fundamentals are friendly, but with the bearish reversals that the live cattle futures posted today and the feeder cattle futures posted today, we might see a little bit of profit taking before the cattle on feed report next week, Friday.
Rich Nelson, what does Allendale have to say about the cattle on feed numbers?
You know, as far as cattle and feed, we released our estimates just this afternoon. We are suggesting numbers for February 7% over last year, but that's simply a makeup number because we had the weather delay from the low January numbers. So overall, not a big market mover in our viewpoint. We're a little more concerned about the weight data, which was out here this morning. Steers now dressing out 20 pounds over last year, heifers 17 pounds over last year. This is from good weather, of course, but also we've had moderate packer intentional kill setbacks in recent weeks. Now, this data is 2 weeks old. It doesn't include that 8% drop in slaughter last week. It doesn't include the 5% drop in slaughter this week versus last year. So these weight numbers actually will be increasing in the coming weeks as well. So we're a little concerned about maybe a little overpriced market for the very short term. And we do expect the long-term bull market to restart in the second half of this year.
We should take up soybeans before we can finish our conversation. I'll start with you, Greg Johnson at TGM. Earlier this week, as you had mentioned, CONAB, which is USDA's counterpart in Brazil, released some estimates. What did they tell you about the size of the soybean crop?
CONAB went from 149.4 million metric tons all the way down to 146.9. Most of the other private analysts in South America are below 150. So somewhere between 145 and 150 would be the average trade guess down there. But yet USDA this month only lowered the crop size from 156 to 155. So there's about a 6.5-7 million metric ton differential. So the question is, will the USDA eventually come down? Even if it's a million metric tons a month, I mean, eventually they could get to that sub 150 number. Or do they really think the acreage number was higher, production number is higher, like they did last year? They stuck to their guns, and USDA was ended up five and a half million metric tons higher than last year. So that, I guess that's the question. There is some, you know, reason for concern, you know, depending on whose number is right. If the CONAB numbers are correct, beans could have some room to run. But on the other hand, if USDA sticks with the 154, 155 type number, that's plenty of beans. And then we know South America is going to plant more beans. We know the U.S. farmer is going to plant more beans this year, and we could be awash in soybeans by a year from now. So that's definitely something to worry about is which number do you believe, USDA or CONAB?
Just to follow up with you, Greg, awash with soybeans, this despite the upcoming renewable diesel plants that will be opening and the demand that might come from that marketplace, is it just too early for that to show up?
We're seeing crush numbers increase every month, but the bottom line is, U.S. bean acres could be quite a bit higher than they were last year. And then we can see another 3 or 4% increase in South America. I mean, Brazil's going to continue to increase acres. And so within a short 12-month period, we could have quite a few more beans. I hope not. I really hope that we don't have that many more acres, but combined corn and beans. But the weather was awful good last fall in a lot of states. And so anhydrous got put on, and we've had got off to a kind of a dry start this year, which means we'll probably make some good progress with field work. So In dry springs, those combined corn and bean acres can be a little bit higher. We may not have near as much prevent plant as what we've had in some years past.
Naomi Plume, you've been doing a really good job of putting into context the marketplace. You did that for corn. What's your assessment for soybeans?
Soybeans, I feel, are going to start to trade sideways here in the short term. I think the gentleman that just spoke made a really good point about South America production overall increasing. Now the thing about the U.S. beans, yeah, we're going to need more beans for the renewables. The research that I did showed that, you know, if all these plants do come on like they're supposed to over the next 2 to 3 years, we're actually going to need another 10 million more acres of soybeans. But that's if they come online. And there's a lot of hurdles ahead of us here. So that's the thing. You know, I think the USDA will eventually lower their Brazilian production number, but not till our beans are in the ground, because then the market won't panic and have higher prices, because then we can say, oh, but there's U.S. beans in the ground and everything's going to be fine. So the demand is going to increase for the U.S. market. I think that is a given, but we're at a point where we can absorb it if we plant some more acres this year. And then again, even with South America having slightly smaller numbers, the USDA does need to account for it, but they will be available and have the ability to plant more acres next year, Brazil and Argentina both. So it's a tightrope right now that we're walking with soybean prices. Again, probably a little bit of a sideways market here for the short term. And then whatever type of a summer rally we get, potentially again between that Mother's Day and Father's Day time frame, also for soybeans, just like corn, that is your opportunity to do some forward contracting.
Do we need to worry again this year, Rich Nelson, about a compressed export window because of the size of the soybean crop coming out of South America in total, not from Brazil, but Brazil and Argentina, and what that might do to the time frame in which you usually the United States has been able to export from September to January?
Certainly right. And I, you know, we've gotten past all the key risk windows for both Argentina as well as Brazil's crop, obviously, here. So this is kind of set in stone. And I do look for a repeat this year, just like this past fall, all the way through current, of Brazil offering a better price. Even right now, we're still almost at the exact same overage versus Brazil, $42 per metric ton. That's $1.13 per bushel. So a little concerned about this issue on the export side still as a problem for us as we expand U.S. supplies. My question about the crush side, you know, USDA last month suggested perhaps a 100 million bushel increase in crush for this new crop. I've got 125 on my balance sheet here, but still these numbers are not yet overcoming the supply increase, which it could be about 250 million bushels over last year. So I'm still a concern about this issue lasting all through next year as well.
Any advice from you about what producers should do? And I'll ask Naomi and Greg the same question. We'll start with Rich and then move to Naomi and Greg. Rich?
For myself specifically here, I have no problem at all moving old crop, especially mainly based on basis considerations. I personally would look for some type of rebound into spring based on risk factors. So I have no problem at all doing some type of reownership via paper. And that's true for both corn as well as soybeans. As far as new crop marketing, for those who do not have much on the books, which our survey also suggested new crop farmers are lighter than normal as well. We're simply waiting for that same price that we heard earlier, roughly that $4.95 to $5.15 range for corn. Discussions on soybeans. We do look for one last good rebound into spring, getting that $12.90 price figured out here for the new crop. So we're a little hesitant on selling new crop at these prices ourselves.
So again, just keep pulling the trigger anytime we see these upside markets with recovery rallies. The thing I want to encourage producers to do, again, you know, be ready with the forward contracting, but also whatever market advisor you're working with out there, call them and get some open orders working that, you know, if November soybeans, let's say just for example, if those November beans this summer can get up to the 1250 area, that would get us close to filling that gap that we had back in December. If we can get up to that area, maybe have some open orders working to buy puts. Mathematically, with your advisor, you can figure out what a 1250 put should be trading at if November futures get up to the 1250 level. And then you can just have those orders working there. So you're setting a price floor then on unpriced bushels, and just be ready to be disciplined. I think producers last year were so complacent and just, you know, assumed things were going to be fine price-wise that they forgot about marketing. And so this year you're going to get another opportunity, but make sure that you are well-versed in all of your strategies and get some of those strategies going on paper right now or going on paper with your grain elevator right now. Because again, when this market takes off and rallies at some point this spring, summer, you're going to be busy and you're not going to have time to do it. So get your marketing plan done now ahead of time and in order so you're taking action.
Greg Johnson, anything to add on the sales of old or new crop soybeans? And then, of course, your final word for the day, too, please.
Yeah, I think you have to keep in mind the big picture. We dropped $1.94. We were at $13.17 in October, and we went all the way down to $11.23. With these kind of big carryouts, you can expect maybe a 30-cent rally, a 32% retracement off of that, which would get you about a dollar higher than where we hit the low at, which would be 12.25. And guess what? We almost approached that today before we sold off. We're down to 11.87. So anything over $12, I think we have to go back to, can we make money? I mean, it's hard to predict prices because we don't know acres, we don't know weather. So let's go back to, can we make money? And with corn, we cannot make money at these prices. So it's a little bit easier decision to say, let's just hold on for the time being until we have a little bit more information. But with beans, I think most farmers can make beans, can make money at these prices with a normal yield. And that might be the deciding factor as to whether to get some bean sales on the books or not.
And we'll ask for a final word from Naomi and Rich as well. Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, your final word?
I think just be ready for anything. You know, my expectation is for quieter markets right now, but you do need to keep an eye on that Brazil crop for second crop corn because if they have weather issues, that market is going to ignite higher for prices, and it'll expound over here in the United States as well. You know, the one thing about that Brazil crop is that the USDA, of course, we think their production number is high at 124 million metric tons, but their total demand is slated at 130 million metric tons. So they need to produce everything that they are expected to produce because the demand is already spoken for. So we've got to watch the weather there. And then, of course, keep an eye on the funds. Are they slowly exiting some of these short positions? We'll find out on the Commitment Traders Report Friday, but definitely follow the money and keep an eye on that.
And Rich Nelson from Allendale, your final word for the day.
No, I agree with the general narrative we've been hearing here so far for the conversations. In general, keep in mind here, we do expect rebounds of some sort based on various risk factors this year, perhaps an overblown concern about dryness in the U.S., the issues with South America, et cetera, here, and other factors. But in general, just keep in mind, to change this supply story, you're going to have about you'll need about the second largest yield hit of the past 25 years to really adjust this general narrative of a two-step down, one-step up type of heavy supply year. So as far as this goes, I agree with the general narrative of saying we will have moderate rebounds. I do not look for a summer peak to surpass the spring peak. So these next few weeks, I would suggest to be a little more active with managing risk in these short-term rebounds we should have here.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like off our website at willag.org or in your favorite podcast application. Our thanks go to our panelists today. They include Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing, Greg Johnson of TGM, and Rich Nelson of Allendale. A quick reminder that if you visit youtube.com/@farmdoc, the first thing you should find there today and through maybe the next few days is a webinar hosted by Mark Schleusner, the Illinois State Statistician, and myself that gives you a fundamental look at agriculture across the Midwest from the just released insights for the 2022 USDA Census of Agriculture. It's a really good grounding of what agriculture looks like across the Midwest and all the crops and livestock that are grown here and how they have changed in that five-year period preceding 2022. Thank you for joining us here on Commodity Week. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.